to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on Building Bridges, Delphi demands provoke auto workers' resistance. But first, nearly 1,000 graduate workers, students, and faculty from New York University, with workers and community supporters from around the city, rallied recently at NYU in response to NYU President Sexton's ultimatum, telling graduate workers to return to work or be fired.
Graduate teaching and research assistants at NYU, members of UAW Local 2110, have been on strike since November 9th. They were forced out after NYU took advantage of a regressive decision by the Bush-controlled National Labor Relations Board and refused to continue to recognize and bargain with the union. Building Bridges, Ken Nash, was at the rally, which we go to right now.
John Sexton's going down. New York is a union town.
Hey, what do we want?
Don't check.
Hey, what do we want?
We are T-Sock 1. We are the union too. We need a contract.
My name is Phil Wheeler. I'm the director of Region 9A of the UAW. John Sexton is not just out of touch, he can't hear anything. He hasn't heard the voice of the GSOC UAW members when over 800 members delivered a letter asking for negotiations. Sexton didn't hear the hundreds of faculty and students at the town hall meeting, and they responded, "Recognize the union." Sexton didn't hear the voices of thousands, and he didn't see the 76 leaders and members that got arrested in front of this very building on August 31st, the day our contract ran out. He hasn't listened to the NYU community. Sexton and his administration saw an opening created by George W. Bush. They took advantage by refusing to bargain. They took advantage by cutting the health benefits of the TAs and RAs. They took advantage by electronic spying on faculty and students. You know, last Monday, our members on strike received a threatening email from John Sexton. Sexton said that you will be replaced if you don't return to work. So now John Sexton wants to teach Scabbin 101 at NYU. This is not just the fight of the UAW. This is a fight with the entire labor movement. This is not just a fight with the labor movement. This is a fight with the elected officials and community leaders and all the people who believe in workplace democracy. Our next speaker is the president of our union, the UAW. Ron Gettelfinger, our president.
The November 28th Sexton letter boils down to this. He says, we took a hard and unflinching look at ourselves and our practices. He may have looked with tunnel vision because the final analysis, he says, trust us. Trust us for what? To cut your benefits? To take away your collective bargaining rights? That's exactly what he's saying. Trust us for. This university is employing corporate anti-union practices, destroying workers' rights, and we're not going to stand for it. Let's let him hear this. Solidarity! Solidarity forever!
Solidarity!
Solidarity forever! Now, it is my pleasure to present to you the president of the AFL-CIO, a person who has stood with all of us from day one, President John Sweeney.
I am happy to see the unity and the solidarity of the labor movement with all the unions that are represented here in support of these courageous workers. Somebody asked me if we were going to jail today, and I said, no, not yet. We're still on probation. But for as long as it takes, the AFL-CIO, your great union, UAW, will be strongly leading the charge. All around the world, we celebrate International Human Rights Day. we're starting the focus on human rights right here at New York University. There is no more flagrant example of our employers violating human rights than what the administration at New York University is doing. 5 years ago, I participated in similar rallies when you were first organizing and when you were recognized and you negotiated your first contract. And to be back here today and see what this university is attempting to do to break a union, to take away collective bargaining, what they're trying to do to these workers in taking away or reducing their benefits and their economic package is a disgrace. On behalf of the AFL-CIO, we strongly support all of your efforts, and we urge all of our allies and all of the elected officials and folks who are labor-friendly to strongly express their views to the administration here at NYU and to tell them this is a horror story and we're not going to tolerate it.
Our GSAC chair, Mike Palm.
Together. NYU likes to say we don't have a problem with unions, we just have a problem with this union and with these workers. This rally today tells NYU that unions and organized labor has a problem with them. We will be here every day. And when you come back and don't see the rat down there, that means we will have a second contract. And until then, we will be out here. And it is now my pleasure to introduce one of our strongest supporters, Andrew Ross.
What do we want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
I'm a member of Faculty Democracy, which is a large group of very vocal of active faculty here at NYU. The vocal majority of the faculty here at NYU support our students. We're standing solid with them. We're very proud of them. We cordially invite you back here anytime until the deed is done.
Roger Toussaint from the Transportation Workers Union.
The 38,000 men and women that move New York will reach you 100%. Our message is that the forces of dignity and justice are greater than the force of the law. Despite the fact that the National Labor Relations Board and the law gives them the right to strip you of a union, the demands of justice and dignity should dictate that you should have a union and representation and respect for your labor. And we share that sentiment because as transit workers, they say to us as well that under the law, we are prohibited from striking. But you know what? Justice is greater than the law. And we have a deadline coming up as well, the expiration of the contract between transit workers and the MTA. And regardless of what the law says, justice will prevail or there will be no buses and trains running. Stand shoulder to shoulder, and you will win, you will prevail. We're going to show them that the social justice movement and labor has power over money and business. Who has the power? You have the power. What kind of power? Union power.
Power.
Say, who got the power?
We have the power.
What kind of power?
Union power.
All right.
Brown Texas going down. New York is a union.
Speaking to Ron Gettelfinger, president of the United Auto Workers.
President Gettelfinger?
When I think about NYU and I think about Delphi, do you see any connections between the two struggles?
I see a connection with NYU and what's going on in there. Those who are out to destroy organized labor, they're following the same pattern. Apparently, at Delphi, they want to destroy workers' income, which is the same thing.
the CEO of Delphi is saying they have no money. They're forced to cut the workers' wages. Is there any truth to that?
First of all, they filed for bankruptcy only in the United States of America, and they're continuing to operate off our shores or around the world. And I'm not sure that they should even be in bankruptcy to begin with. They have over $1 billion in cash. They've been able to borrow money at prime rates. So I think that he was on a mission to lead that company into bankruptcy, and there's no need for it to be there.
There's something wrong with the bankruptcy laws in this country to put the onus on labor to the way they do.
The industrial policy in this country for many companies is just simply that, to go into bankruptcy. That way they can tear up their contracts, they can release themselves of their obligations to their retirees, they can tear up their pension plans, and they can do away with their health care.
Is there any part of the union movement that is trying to get something changed in the bankruptcy laws?
Obviously, we always try to elect people who stand up for working Americans. And with all of that that we've got on our plate right now, that's just another issue that we have to confront. We can't even get the minimum wage raised in this country from $5.15 an hour, which it's been since 1997. So when we look at minimum wage, we look at the fight that's going on with pension right now, we look at the attack on Social Security and all of the other programs that are out there to help American citizens, that's just another one that's on our plate. Yes, we have to do something about the bankruptcy laws that exist today, because clearly they're in favor of the employer and against the workers.
GM has just given a break to Delphi in terms of the amount of money that they're paying for Delphi products. You think this will make any difference?
I have no idea what discussions Delphi is having with General Motors. Our focus is on Delphi and bringing them to the table with a fair and equitable agreement. The agreement that they've got on the table right now is an insult to workers, and it's one that will lead toward confrontation instead of resolution.
What's the timeline here in terms of the bankruptcy court and in terms of when a possible strike might occur?
Delphi has went to the court now and changed the date from December the 16th to January the 25th before they go in and file a motion to void the contracts. Now, obviously, if they did that once, they could do it again. Secondly, if they don't do it again and they do file the motion, then the judge would hold hearings. So I assume it would take somewhere in the neighborhood of a month to a month and a half or even longer.
Do you see any possibility of they'll come to their senses?
I don't speculate that far down the road. We're just working with them one day at a time in the hopes of being able to bring them to their senses and to reach an equitable agreement for workers that have dedicated their lives to the company.
And what would be the ramifications on GM and on the contract with the UAW if there was a strike at Delphi?
I don't know about that because, again, I'm not focused on General Motors. I'm focused on our members who work at Delphi and who have been insulted and abused by outsiders who've been at that company less than 6 months and brought in a team to drive them into bankruptcy.
Okay, thank you very much. We're speaking to Ron Gettelfinger, president of the United Auto Workers, on the situation at Delphi Motors.
CEO Steve Miller fired for bankruptcy and proposed a 50% wage cut, massive layoffs, and hefty bonuses for management, local officers, and rank-and-file workers at many union locals across several states reacted by organizing marches, petition drives, and meetings to fight back, proposing work to rule and a possible strike. Joining us now is Greg Shotwell, member of UAW Local 2151, Delphi Auto Parts, and author of Live Bait and Ammo. And I want to begin. Many big corporations are using the bankruptcy forum to harness labor, to try to decimate the union contract, the pension system, etc. Tell us more about what bankruptcy means for the Delphi workers.
For the Delphi workers, it's economic terrorism. They intend to take away everything that we have ever earned. People are going to lose their homes, they're going to lose their pensions, they're going to lose their health care, and the wages that they propose are unlivable. We're not going to be able to pay our bills. The result of this is just going to be disaster. And they've put us in a position where we have no choice except to fight back with every means that we have at our disposal.
Greg, well, the bankruptcy court hasn't yet issued any edicts, so right now you're dealing with what CEO Steve Miller is proposing or demanding. So why don't we flesh out what that is in terms of numbers and what the actual demands that the CEO is making on the workers and on the union?
His last proposal was like $12.50 an hour, but also included increased premiums and copays on insurance, which would further reduce our wages in that regard. He does not want to continue the pensions, but over and above that, the contract would bust the union, and it would cause a great indignity in the workplace. They wouldn't honor seniority. There would be no excuses for attendance. We wouldn't have any control over the conditions of our labor. He wants to take us back to pre-1930s auto work.
Actually, I have some of the proposals that I have studied by Delphi. It seems like somewhere between massive layoffs and busting of the union. You label this economic terrorism. Expand on what this means if these proposals do go through.
Well, when I say economic terrorism, you're asking people to give up more than 60% of their wages. When you include the insurance premiums we'll have to pay on top of that pay cut, it's more like 70 to 75% pay cut. We can't live on that. Plus, he wants to take away our pension, which, you know, if it's pushed off on the taxpayers, I'm not sure what we would get, but probably less than half than we had expected. A lot of people who are already retired are in jeopardy. They would lose their supplement, and they're not eligible for Social Security or Medicare, so they would be without insurance. The result of this is people are going to lose their homes. They're not going to be able to pay their bills. They're going to lose everything that they've acquired. And the indignity of working with a contract that is essentially a non-union contract.
And at the same time, management is getting bonuses?
Yes. For some reason, they think that we should want to help a company survive when the only people who are going to profit from it are maybe 500 or 600 top executives. They'll become multimillionaires, and the rest of us will be impoverished. We have no reason to want to help this company or General Motors, because General Motors is responsible for Delphi. They created this. They set Delphi up to buy high and sell low. They demanded reductions in prices for parts that drove Delphi into bankruptcy. Now, I worked for GM for 20 years, and they don't want to be responsible for my pension or my health care and retirement. So we recognize that GM is ultimately responsible for Delphi's fate.
But certainly this is part of a trend. We've seen it a great deal in the airline industry, where bankruptcy Chapter 11 is used as a way of really breaking unions and disciplining workers. One of the things that always hit me about auto, the steel industry, there are ways that working class people had to drive up their wage and really become part of the middle class. And that was through the kind of provisions and efforts that the United Automobile Workers fought for on behalf of auto workers. So the implication of this seems to be, to me, economically devastating for the country and very much, in particular, really affecting many workers of color who managed to pull themselves up economically by the bootstraps through their work in auto.
And you know, with the UAW represented workforce, we won contracts that set the standard. Now, what Delphi wants to do is lower the standard, not just for us, but across the board. It will be all workers in America. When we take a pay cut, they're going to turn around to the next group and demand the same pay cut. And we've already seen this in our area, where workers who are supplying us and making comparable wages have been told by management that they will take the same pay cuts that we take. So the ramifications are much broader than just Delphi.
Rick, let's talk about the fight back, because I know there's been a lot of activity among the rank and file and local union offices. There's been a lot of meetings, a lot of regional meetings. What's going on?
Well, we've been organizing rank and file meetings where we get together in an unofficial capacity to talk to workers about working to rule. Mr. Miller has been very antagonistic and insulting towards workers. It appears that he's trying to provoke people into rash and impulsive actions. People are feeling threatened and they're very angry. We organize these meetings and encourage people to not commit acts of violence, not to retaliate by destroying property or sabotage. We do encourage people to resist the concessions and to fight back, but we want them to do it, first of all, in a safe way, second of all, in an organized way, and finally, in a legal way. And that's what Work to Rule is all about. Work to Rule is also about improving that network of communication and reinforcing a solidarity across the shop floor. Now, the International Union has negotiated in a very professional manner, but Mr. Miller has been treating it like a circus sideshow. The International is organized vertically in a hierarchy. They have their place at the bargaining table. We are organizing horizontally across the shop floor, or the grassroots, if you will, in an unofficial capacity. Our place is not at the bargaining table. Our place is at the point of production. We have our hands on the levers. We control production. And this is where profit is made or not made. This is where cost is reduced or driven up. We are instructing workers and reminding workers that they do have that power, and it's time to exert that power.
Now, I know you have some poetic license as a writer as well, and I had read a statement of yours, when workers run production backwards, cost exceeds profit, and the consequences fit the criminals like handcuffs. Explain a little bit more, because I know that's a metaphor in many ways for Work to Rule, but just tell us more about that and how that works.
Working to Rule, you know, it's illegal to have a slowdown or to say it is time to slow down. Working to Rule is a method of simply following all the rules that management has instructed us to do, and to follow them to the letter. But that's all we do. Now, Mr. Miller has made disparaging remarks about us, that we're not worth our pay, that you shouldn't pay somebody to cut the grass as much as we get. So we don't have to give them our knowledge. That's not what he is paying us for. For example, my machine stops running. The supervisor says, "What's wrong?" I say, "I don't know." So he asks the job setter, and the job setter says, "I don't know." So he asked the skilled tradesman, and the skilled tradesman says, "I don't know." We have outsourced all decisions to the boss. Now he's going to really begin to sweat, because he truly doesn't know. But he has to make the decision. And that's Working to Rule in its most fundamental manner.
Greg, the dimensions are enormous. Delphi plans to cut 24,000 U.S. auto jobs of its 34,000 U.S. factory jobs over the next 3 years. The industry is destroying the American working class. Is Work to Rule the only way that you can think of responding to this catastrophic situation that will take people who have earned a living, have some effort of comfort, and they will be driven into destitution and have their lives decimated?
No, Work to Rule is really a preparation for strike. Work to Rule does two things. If it's done effectively, it reduces the inventories they may have built up, so it makes the company more vulnerable. But Work to Rule, more importantly, establishes a network of communication and solidarity, not only between the workers on the shop floor, but as we are going from locality to locality and holding these meetings, we're establishing a network of communication across the country between not only Delphi plants, but with our brothers and sisters at GM, Ford, Chrysler, Visteon, American Axle. So also the people that we do supply. Ultimately, we will probably have to strike, and we will have to bring down General Motors so that General Motors understands that they have to come to the table and be reasonable. They are responsible for Delphi. They created this monster, and now they're going to have to clean it up. If they don't, then GM's going to be driven into bankruptcy. We don't have anything to lose at this point. We have everything to win. They have backed us into a corner and not given us any exit whatsoever.
Greg, we will have to have you back to talk more about these developments. But in the meantime, for people to learn more about what's going on, what's a good website?
I'd say a good website is futureoftheunion.com.
Could you give us that one more time?
Okay. futureoftheunion.com. Another one for more history on the UAW would be UAWNDM.org.
You got 30 seconds. Is GM suffering to the point where this is the only answer, which is to take it out on the backs of the workers?
Absolutely not. The UAW just gave General Motors the biggest concession package in history. Now, if you recall last spring, General Motors said, we have $20 billion in Aviva, which is a trust fund to take care of health care and other benefits. With the new concessions, they put $1 billion in the Aviva. That leaves $19 billion for General Motors, and legally they can take $9 billion out this year, $10 billion out next year. That's cash for the corporation. They have the money. This bankruptcy reminds me of the buildup to the Iraq War. Delphi is not without funds either. Delphi took their money out of the country and invested it overseas and, in a calculated manner, undermined our productivity here in the United States. That is truly our legacy. They took our legacy and sent it overseas.
Well, we will be back with you in the weeks that come. This is too important not to explore in yet greater depth, and we really thank you very much for joining us. Greg Shotwell, member of UAW Local 2151 Delphi Auto Parts in Michigan, and author of Live Bait and Ammo, and we'll explore that when you come back next time as well.
Thank you very much. Nice
our
talking
pleasure.
To you.
And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.